I would like to talk about things which are related. Well, first of all, I mean, let me thank the organizer for inviting me, of course, but also for organizing this conference that has been very good, and also to the people from the Film Institute. I mean, my first time in Toronto, and I like it. And certainly, I mean, this is a nice place to come for these kind of things. I would like to say that. And you know, well, you see, I'm a very strange creature because I am in a department of chemistry and an institute of mathematics. So normally, when you drift, you just make one step, right? I mean, you go from chemistry to physics, or from physics to mathematics, or from mathematics to psychology, or whatever, or vice versa, right? But not make two jumps. So that will show in the talk, as you will see. So what I'm gonna do is I will describe what is called some quantum manifestation of classical chaotic dynamics. Mainly chaotic, because I mean, I will also talk about some stable things. Let me thank my collaborator, because if I put it at the end, I will forget. So Rosa Benito, which is in the university, the other University of Madrid that you were asking, and Marco Saraceno and Diego Viniaski in Buenos Aires. So, and this is the outline. So I will try to make an introduction and motivation, all that, because what I'm doing is related to what you have been talking here, but not quite. And then I will show how all these things that you know, invariant torus, periodic orbit, homoclinic, heteroclinic motion, Poincaré-Wilcox theorem, shows in quantum mechanics. So, you know, when... something that I should stay saying is, you know this, right? You know that classical chaos is well-defined phenomena. For example, I mean, you always can rely on the Abramoff exponent to tell if you are in chaos or not. But in quantum mechanics, it's an open question. We don't know exactly what it means. I will tell you. So actually, when the organizer first contacted me and said, would you like to come? I said, oh, yeah, sure. I mean, this is such a great place. I mean, I would like to go. I said, what are we going to talk about? And I'm going to talk about quantum, I mean, this great job that I recently did about the quantum manifestation of Poincaré, a Wilcox theorem. But then when I came here, I was sort of frozen because I said, well, but everybody's talking about KEM theorem, about classical mechanics. I'm going to talk about something completely different. Nobody's going to understand me. So at some point, you know, I say, okay, I will look into internet and see if I find something that cheer me up, and say, I will look something really elementary. So of course, quantum mechanics 101. And see, the purpose of this paper, was writing somebody, is to prepare a simple and understandable guide to some of the fundamental theory of quantum mechanics. The reason I'm writing this is because I constantly see that people are become by people who claim to be expert in quantum mechanics, and particularly by the complex and obscure language that these people use. I hope that, whatever. So, it's always, I mean, when you talk, we all have a jargon, right, that, you know, our colleagues understand, and the colleagues next to us don't do much. But in quantum mechanics, it seems to be like completely off most of the time. So I will try to overcome this. And so, and the paper finished with this. This finally led me, on the purpose of this paper, to give the reader some idea of when people are talking sense or not about quantum mechanics. The first rule of quantum mechanics is that anything is possible and true, but some things are more probable than others. Well, this is true, but you know, this is not like for, I mean, to tell the mathematician this, I mean, I don't think that you feel comfortable. And the second rule is even worse, because it is impossible to solve anything exactly and prove anything with absolutely certainty. So, I mean, what I'm doing here. And so at that point, I say, okay, I'm going to go to the organizer and say, I'm not talking, find somebody else, this is ridiculous, I mean, I'm going to... But, you know, I was... At that point, I started sitting down at the back. And I saw, I mean, I don't know if you have seen this, I took a picture. This is, it is there, at the back. So Sir Michael Berry gave here, apparently in 1992, a talk, a distinguished lecture, on quantum and classical paraphernalia. So I said, okay, he did it, I mean, maybe I can do it. Obviously, I cannot do about the Riemann zero, it's too complicated, he can do that. Anyway, so then I went back to internet and I tried to dig some of the papers of Michael Berry, because I think that, most or all are very good, but you know, this I like it, because it's very it was very controversial then, because he wrote this in 1989. There is no quantum chaos. this is what everybody repeats. There is no quantum gear. So when you tell people, I'm working on quantum gear, they give you all kind of nasty comments. Say, well, but it's that not a cease, it's well known. And say, okay. So at some point I stopped discussing that and say, okay, well, I do something that, you know, in the AAP, in the American Institute of Physics, they have a number, so I submitted paper with that number, so give me a law. But it's because they forget. They say, okay, there is no quantum, there is no exact definition, it's an open question, in the sense of exponential sensitivity to initial condition. This is true. This is true. It's a linear theory in some sense. The wave function, sorry, let me be, and I will. So the wave function evolves linearly with time, but this is not the only way in which you can frame quantum mechanics. So maybe there is another place in which you can see this novel quantum phenomena will reflect the presence of classical chaos, which is what I'm going to try to convince you. The study is called quantum chaology. So now some people prefer to say quantum chaology, but you know, when the experimentalists came into the field, they just solved the problem. Everybody say quantum chaos. Sorry. Go ahead. And a chemist. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm sorry. No, you, yeah. A little bit, but a little bit. Okay, so, and this is, that I dig this in the paper. They say the quantum worlds appear very different from the world of classical physics that it supersedes. So, I, quantum energy level, wave function, and probability seems incompatible with Newton particles moving along well-defined orbit. Yes, the two theories might be intimately related. So this is what I'm going to try to convince. Even the moon can be regarded as a quantum particle, but the circumstances don't show that. But the classical limit is subtle. This is true. This is true. And this is why it's an open question. And much of current research is aimed at understanding it. Okay, so obviously you know this much better than I do, so I'm not going to explain, but this guy show in this paper, in this famous paper, that periodic orbits are very important. Homogeneous solution and heterogeneous solution to them are very important to organize chaos, right? And there is, I mean, probably is, I mean, it's very difficult to dig that out of quantum mechanics, but it is possible. And also other things that later or before, some people saw the relevance of invariant tori, that was before, obviously. Or Cantori, I will show you how Cantori show in quantum mechanics, or the Poincaré-Virchow structure, which is what we have done very recently. Actually, the paper is in the archive but has not appeared yet. Okay, so models. I'm sorry. And I'm going to use the lithium cyan molecule. But don't worry. The idea of a molecule is a collection of oscillators. You know that, you know. So it's a Hamiltonian system, and the oscillators are coupled and unharmonic, so there's plenty of room for chaos, and the space is mixed. So, I mean, this is very, in that sense, you just forget about what lithium means, or cyanide, or if this is a poison, or it's not, or whatever. I mean, just forget it. It's a system very much like what you do. Actually, I mean, this is the thing. So, you have three coordinates for the vibration, so this is a stretch, stretch and contract, this is an angle that moves, and this is another stretch. This is a three-body problem, right? It's, I mean, the masses are different, but they have. And this is, but look at the Hamiltonian, oh, there is P theta here, P theta square, right, missing. And oh yeah, and a plus. I was looking for the plus. I didn't put any minus. And this is the potential. Chemists, we call it potential in surface, but you know, you get sometimes laws because it is the potential when they move. Okay, so what I'm going to do is also I'm going to freeze this, because this is a good reason in chemistry to do that, because it's a tough bone. So it's what you call it adiabatically separate from the rest. They don't talk much. I mean, there is no resonances, so they live outside. Okay, so this is one of the, and this is the potential. So the potential is relatively complicated because it is one well here, another well here, and something in between. So this is a cut. This is what we call the minimum energy path, because it's the minimum that takes you from one well to another. And so this is one well, this is the other, and this is the profile in energy. So I think that you can feel comfortable with this, right? And even like we do Poincaré superposition section here, we follow trajectories and see how they cross this minimum energy path. That gives you a lot of information. Well, you have to do weird, or weird, not very weird, but you know, but a canonical transformation in order to that the area is preserved, but it's just technical detail. Okay, but and also I'm going to present results with this. But Gurimovich Stadium is a pleasure and an honor. I mean, it's the first time that I talk this in person, so. I don't know if this is, but you know, well, it's very hyperbolic, right? I mean, everything is very chaotic here. This is why people like it. There are other people who don't like it because there is this marginally stable bouncing ball motion here that sometimes obscure your calculation. But you know, people. Sorry. And this is another one that I'm going to use. The quartic oscillator is very. It's very simple. It is very, very, very chaotic, except for it was thought to be completely hyperbolic in this limit for a long time, until 19, which Dalkis and Rutherford find families of periodic orbits. And, sorry, Carlos, I mean, I got your paper very late. I couldn't, but this is, I have to put your work here at some point. Well, I mean, the good thing is that this is smooth and it's homogeneous, so you are free of the hassles of phase space evolution, of the bifurcations, and so everything scales. It's very nice and very chaotic. And finally, I'm going to do what you like. I'm going to do a map. This is the typical KM thing. I mean, I put a parameter here measuring the threshold of the perturbation is what I have been hearing here. Okay, and well, this is the map, and you can see, you can understand this map as a stroboscopic version of a flow, which is a kick Hamiltonian, because I need to do the quantum mechanics of this, so I need a Hamiltonian. Okay, so tools. Problem is that we know, that in classical mechanics, the best thing is to go in and see things in phase space. But in quantum mechanics, the problem is that you deal with the wave function. And then the wave function is an object of the coordinate. So you need to construct some sort of phase space representation. This is what Wigner did in 32 in this innocent paper in which he was just looking for quantum correction to thermodynamic statistical mechanics, right? I mean, because statistical mechanics is another theory, this frame in phase space, and you need to construct if you want to do it quantum mechanically, you need to construct these probabilities or quasi-probabilities. It's called quasi-probability because, okay, this is a probability, it's a function of Q and P, but it can be negative. Very little negative. And, you know, supposedly there is a meaning to this oscillation, but, you know, I don't understand them. I mean, there is very few people write about this thing. Well, it is related to entanglement. Now these days people understand that, right? But okay, but why is this? It's because it violates Heisenberg uncertainty principle. You cannot talk about the finite point in Q or the finite point in P. This is forbidden in quantum mechanics, but there is a solution. You should make an average. So Husimi, this Japanese guy, make this average and got what is called now Cohen's state representation or Husimi function, which is completely positive. So this is the one that I'm going to use. It's a probability in phase space. It's very easy to calculate. Okay, normally when you deal with a function, you want to look at the maxima because, I mean, they are easier to calculate. I mean, you don't like to look at the zeros. But it happened that the zeros are very informative. It has a lot of information. And if you don't really care exactly where they are placed, but you want to know how many there are, or something more topological, more general, they are very important. I am going to use them in all the talk. All right? Good. So now I'm going to show you how different things different classical structures show in quantum mechanics. Well, the invariant Torah is very old, let me go back to quantum mechanics 101 and let you know how to solve this silly problem. And this is a well, so the potential is infinite here. The wave function has to be zero outside and some value inside. So it's just very easy to solve. But why I'm doing this? Because I don't want you to forget the dynamics. Normally, in quantum mechanics, you forget the dynamics. You just do a stationary thing, and you forget the dynamics. But in this change of variables, what you have here is the momentum. and the momentum divided by h bar, this k, is what it is dynamical information here, then, well, you know that the solution to this simple equation is just, there is a zero missing here, right? And so it has to be sine and cosine, so you make a linear combination and you put the boundary condition in zero and in L. And then you discover that not all k's are possible. Well, this is typical of quantum mechanics, not all values of the energy are possible, but just certain values of k. But as I told you, this k has dynamical information. So if only certain values of k are possible, only certain values of the classical action are possible. And this is how you see this the action in quantum mechanics. The action is quantized, and the action, the classical action is equivalent to the quantum number in quantum mechanics. Actually, how do you do that in more complicated system? Well, Einstein did it, Einstein did the final point in which there's a very nice history behind that, because there were other attempts first that were very lucky, because they deal with a separable system. This is what Niels Bohr did with the hydrogen atom. But finally, Einstein understood that the way to do this is to go to Torrey and do the quantization of the total action in the n topologically different path that defined the torus. And then you have equation like this, expression like this. This is classical information that must fulfill a quantum condition. So this is h bar, the Planck constant, times an integer number, which is a quantum number. And here there is a topological phase, the Maslow index, which is a nightmare, but you have to live with that. And you know, associated to that, you have to put a wave function, because in wave mechanics, in quantum mechanics, you have a wave. You cannot just think of a simple trajectory. Every time you think of a trajectory, I think it's fine. This is what I'm going to do all the time. I'm gonna think about a trajectory, but always I'm going to put a wave riding on it, and there will be interference. And this is what... okay, so example, lithium cyanide. Okay, this is quantum surface section. This is not a very good picture, but you will see here is KEM theorem, right? I mean, here you don't see, you just see the resonances, you see the tori, you don't see much chaos, and as you increase the energy, which is like the perturbation in this molecule, when everything starts to vibrate more violently, then there will start chaos. Here you don't see, but you know, there will be like periodic orbits embedded in that chaos, okay? But then, if I quantize, okay, if I solve the quantum mechanics, what do I get? I get the wave function. And so, here it's like, in classical mechanics you have to do a transformation to angle action variables. In quantum mechanics they do it for you, because it's the quantum number. So, this is the first wave equation that you get. It has no nodes, so it is the quantum number is 1, the action is the minimum. So this is the next to that. It has a plane, it has a nodal plane, and the quantum number is 2. And 3 and 4 and 5, etc. And I told you there is a very good way to keep track of this thing, which is to look at the Husini function. This is phase space, this is PQ, and then you have seen here there is no 0, here there is 1 0, there is 2, there is 3, and they are all on a line. And obviously at some point, I mean, you go too high in energy and you start to grow, chaos start to grow, and then you will have periodic orbits there. I mean, or right? Then you will see this. You see that here there are some sort of periodic. I mean, the wave function sits on a periodic orbit, which I showed you before. I mean, this is a periodic orbit, right? So here it sits, more start to sit there, and then the zeros start to decompose, and there are several which seems to get apart from the line. I will go back to that. Remember that, because that will be important in the last part when I talk about the quantum Poincaré Virchow theorem. Okay, so periodic orbit, do they show in quantum mechanics? Yes. This is something that is called SCARS, and it was discovered, let us say, in 1984 by Erich Heller, right, in 1984. But the idea is the following. I mean, what do you expect in a very chaotic system like the Punimovich stadium, right? Okay, if you run a trajectory, it will be like that. So if you look into phase space, it will be chaotic. The wave function should be something similar. It should be distributed more or less uniformly. Obviously, I mean, you have to have zeros, and then, but you know, sort of on the average, they should be like that. And this is what happened typically. But some of the function seems to deviate from that, and you see them that they accumulate in here, or in here, or in here, or in here. I mean, those are periodic orbits. So when that happened, Heller coined the term SCAR to name this enhanced probability localization. For whatever reason, this wave function knows about periodic orbits. Seems so, right? So, well, okay, you can also, this is what I was telling you before, the zeros also tell you. I mean, they seem to migrate, right? And, okay, well, this has generated a lot of interest and still generates after 25 years. For example, this is a paper, the 202, in which they saw the scarring in light in optical fiber, right? I mean, the idea is that you get an optical fiber and you cut it, instead of making it cylindrical, I mean, you cut it a little bit, and then the light goes like this around, and it bounces. So it's like a billiard. When you put a CCD camera at the end, what you see is just the projection of all these bounces. And it's like it's a billiard, it's experimental billiard, right? And they see the scars sometimes. Other they don't, right? Depending on the energy. Some people have do the same thing in optical resonators. So there's small lasers like this one. Well, this is completely different, but you know, the idea is that, I mean, that you make a little thing, nano thing, and the light gets there in special places, and this is controlled by rays, by classical trajectories, by periodic orbits, and even now in the graphene, which is like the latest thing in nanotechnology, they have seen quantum SCAR in 2009, and well, with sheets of graphene, they can construct some sort of billiards and see how the electrons enter and leave, and they see peaks in the conductivity, which are controlled by these periodic orbits. So it's. But what do they happen? Okay, this Heller gave a very nice dynamical explanation. In the sense, what happens is the follow. Okay, there is nothing wrong to think about trajectories as far as you put a wave on this, right? So the idea is that you put a wave packet, a localized wave packet here, and launch it along a periodic orbit and see what happens. So what happens is that it moves back and forward, but at the same time, the Lyapunov is sort of making it spreading the trajectories, because, I mean, this is not like a single trajectory. There are many trajectories there, and so there were some that will go. But the thing is that every now and then, with a certain period, the wave function almost recovers, goes back to the same place and almost recovers the probability. Not quite, because there is always something lost because of the Lyapunov, right? And so this would be the idea, right? I mean, you launch something on a periodic orbit, and we know that they will move away from the following the unstable manifolds, and they will contract in the other direction. But and those manifolds will rotate also as you move along the orbit. But every time that you come back, you will recover part of the initial wave packet, and so you will see recurrences. So this is a fast time in which the thing goes away. There is an intermediate time in which you get the recurrence. And there is a time that is killing you this, which is related to Lyapunov. Actually, I mean, you can extract the Lyapunov out of this time. So the idea is that, okay, normally people in quantum mechanics don't like to look in time. They prefer to look in energy. But, Fourier invented the Fourier transformation for that, right? So you can make the spectrum doing that, and then this short time will be the envelope, this intermediate time will be the separation between these peaks, and this killing time will be the width. So the Lyapunov is in this width. Okay, so where do these peaks appear? Then now we have to remember that, you know, there is a wave riding the equation. So every time that comes back to this initial place, with the right phase, there will be a constructive interference. If not, they will just cancel out and disappear. But when that happens when the action is quantized again. So this is a what is called Bohr somersault quantization condition of tension. When that happens, then you see the peaks. But this is a necessary condition, but not sufficient. Sometimes this condition is fulfilled and you don't see a scar. And this is where in 1994, and now we have do better versions, we decided to study and construct a method to systematically construct a scar function, which does not mean, so what Heller did was to find a scar function in the eigenstates. What we did is to construct combination of eigenstates that were given scar. And the idea is very simple. It's called, what is called, is a tube function. So the idea is that you just take a trajectory you want. This is in the quartic potential. This is a periodic orbit, this box type of periodic orbit. And so you have x the t, y the t, p the x the t and p y. And you have an action and you have a period and you have all that. And you just like put a tube around that and let it move. So you sort of smooth, average it. And you get this. You get this function, which is localized on that. Well, I mean, it seems not to be very interesting, this is what you have done it, right? But what happens if you look in phase space? Well, they sit in the fixed point corresponding to that orbit. That does not seem very interesting. But the thing is that what we did later is we show how this function could be improved. And the idea is that you have to let it evolve according to the quantum dynamics for a time which is called the Ehrenfest time. The Ehrenfest time essentially is, okay, if you have a wave packet that is going to move in this bilia, the Lyapunov, I'm moving the packet in this direction, the Lyapunov is moving it to me in the other direction, the perpendicular. So the time that it takes the packet to spread up to the limits due to the Lyapunov, this is the Ehrenfest time, more or less, right? And so when you do that, add a quantized energy with a tube function, you get this. And you may say, hey man, I mean, this is the same thing as this. Well, quite by no cigar, because, for example, if you look, I mean, here you don't notice the difference, but if you go to phase space, this is the old one, this is the tube function, which is sitting on the fixed point, and this one is sitting on the manifold. So by this method, what you do is you catch the information of the manifold associated to the instability of this periodic orbit, right? Because this is unstable. Okay, so this is what we did. Essentially, it was making it more perfect, the idea of Heller. But later, we returned to the question of what happened to the density that does not come back in the recurrence along the scarring periodic orbit, the one that lives perpendicular because of the Lyapunov. And that brings information about the homoclinic and heteroclinic motions. So the idea that we made was very simple. So the idea is that, okay, we put a wave packet here, right? And, okay, in the perpendicular direction is the periodic orbit, right? It's coming back and forth, and this is the recurrence that I showed you before. But there will be another part that will leave through the manifold, the unstable manifold that I painted here in red, and at some point, the homoclinic point, obviously, and it will cross the stable. So part of this probability will return here. Obviously, there will be others that will make longer excursion, but the problem in quantum mechanics is the longer you let the thing to move, the biggest is the phase that it pick up. And then when you add it to something, it disappears, tends to disappear. So you have to take the fastest thing, I mean, the quickest thing, because if not, I mean, you are not going to get anything. Even this is a second order effect compared to the periodic orbit, which is shorter, right? Okay, so that was an idea. So maybe this happened. And if this happened, I mean, there may be information, okay, this is in the Bunimovich stadium, this is the horizontal periodic orbit, and these are the manifold. So this is one circuit. Okay, here we only painted like half of the phase space, right? There is something symmetric here, and so it will go here, and the idea is that you come back here, instead of doing all the way, and come back through the, using the stable one, the stable manifold. So this is one possible path, and this is the other, which is essentially the same length when you took this, the other primary homoclinic point. So you have your primary homoclinic point, H1 and H2. Okay, well, this is an assumption. It sounds very nice. I mean, it could be true. But, I mean, can we make it more quantitative? Well, we did. So the idea is that that is what happened if this that we said is true. Okay, then we will have a quantization along the periodic orbit. This is the scar condition. But if we are correct, there will be another addition to the phase that will come through the homoclinic path, and this is that will be the homoclinic torus. Let us call it. I don't know if this is correct. Some people use that word before us. But the idea is that you have a second quantization condition on the torus, and you can combine the two of them. And if both of them are fulfilled at the same time, meaning at a certain energy, if both of them are fulfilled, then you will have like extra building up of probability, because not only this part of the probability that come back returns through the periodic orbit comes in phase, but also the one that make the homoclinic excursion will come in phase. So you will have a reinforcement of this combination, right? Okay. So now the problem is, how do you calculate things with a periodic, with a homoclinic orbit, because it's infinite in principle? Well, in quantum mechanics, there is no such a thing as infinite time, because there is always the Planck constant, the uncertainty principle that make you cut your thing. So the idea is that here you have something, okay, this is the periodic orbit, then what you can do is you can use the families of satellite periodic orbit that approximate to the true infinitely long periodic orbit. And so this is families. You see that here it comes, do something, and almost horizontal. This is the same thing. So if you want better approximation, so you go to the next member of the family, so it sort of approach, because in that last step, do it twice, or do it three times, or four, or five. And so you have two families approaching to every of the 2 points. And then what you can do is you can, using these families, and calculate this combination of quantization. And you see that they converge very quickly. So, I mean, we are safe. So now I would like you to remember these numbers, 3, 36, and 3, essentially, because, okay, this is the area. This is an area or a length, in phase space, right? Okay, the idea is that, can we get those numbers out of the quantum mechanics? Because these are classical, right? This is classical actions, right? So what I did essentially here is, when the action along the periodic orbit and the action along the homoclinic circuits are quantized at the same time. This is classical. So, but do quantum mechanics cares about that? Yes, because, so what happens is that when both conditions are fulfilled, the scattered state will be better defined in the sense which I said before. I mean, it is constructed by something that has a very good constructive interference. So when you project it into the spectra of eigenstate or any other thing, this is a quality test like any other, you will see that because it's better, it will be narrower. And so you will see that the width is narrow. And so this is what we did. Okay. We again constructed one of these functions in the stadium, the horizontal. For example, you see that here, there is a minimum. Here is wider, and here, this is because of the hyperbolic structure. Because there, I mean, the manifolds are rotating, and what happened in this point is that all the probability goes into the P, in P coordinate, not in the Q. And this is why this happened. Okay, and then, and this is the projection on the eigenstate. So you can measure this width. For example, with this formula, it's very easy. So you have to scale and make them a dimension and all that with the Lyapunov, etc. I mean, those are details that I will save them for you. But the idea is that when you get this relative width for different values of the energy or the wave number, which is equivalent, well, it doesn't seem very promising, right? I mean, it looks, chaotically oscillating. But when you make a Fourier transform of this, you see that there are two peaks. There are many, if you want, but I mean, there are two peaks which are big. Where? At 0.633 and 1.00. But what happens is the Fourier transform is periodic, so and the period is the length of the orbit, which happens to be 4 in this case. So if you subtract this, you get the number that I told you before. So I got these numbers that were classical just from pure quantum mechanical information. Okay, maybe you don't like this argument, because maybe when I say this about projecting, you got lost, because this is pure quantum mechanical thing, and it's not too dynamical. Okay, we did a second paper in which, we tried to see the same thing in the wave functions. So they did the same thing. We construct the same function here, all the same as I did before. And now we calculate the Hosseini. So this is phase space, you like that. So this is the classical manifolds. And then we did it in four situations. One, in all of them, the action along the periodic orbit were quantized. But in this case, in this four situation, we played with the quantization along the homoclinic circuits, the two primary homoclinic points, right? So here, you see, this is the quantum number. So it's almost 29, so it's quantized in the point, in the first homoclinic point, and it is quantized in the second, because this is 26. Here is quantized, but this is 30 and a half, so it is halfway quantized, so it is anti-quantized, let's say. And this is anti-quantized, anti-quantized, and this is quantized, quantized, right? And this is the situation here. In all of them, you always see a maximum of the Hosseini on the periodic orbit, on the fixed point corresponding to the periodic orbit. Fine, this is always, and this is the biggest thing. But when you have quantized, quantized in this point and in this point, you see that the Hosseini presents a maximum or maxima in both of these points. Here, because it is anti-quantized, sorry, I got lost. This is quantized, quantized. So maximum, maximum. This is quantized, anti. So it's maximum and a minimum, or near a minimum, which is there, right? Here is anti-anti, and this is a minimum, because this is a hollow, and this is a near a minimum. And this is anti-quantized, so there is a minimum, and this is quantized, which is a maximum. So you can see the same thing in the similar way, right? But okay, and can you push this forward? Yes, you can push it forward, making it this LNFS time longer. There is some reason why you should stop at the LNFS time, because this is like when you everything gets filled out, right? But if you go farther, what happens is that you collect too much information, because you let your orbit to move too much, right? And if it moves too much, it collects too much information, and so you get chaos, and you cannot make sense out of that. But okay, you can make it a little bigger than TA, like 0.1 or 3.3, and this is what you get. Okay, what we plot here, okay, here you don't see much. This is in phase space. You see that everything is more defined, and you know, you get maxima in along the manifolds, but you don't see much. So what we did is we plot along this function, the Hosseini function, along the manifold, the unstable manifold. And then you see that for this distance, for this time, you only get this point, I mean the point at the fixed point of the periodic orbit, and maybe a little maxima here, a little bit, right? But as you increment this time, you collect more information, you see this point better defined, H01 and H02, you get like the secondary homoclinic point, you get maxima there also, and you get also information about the heteroclinic points. And the heteroclinic points, the heteroclinic circuits were these. I mean, corresponding to these circuits and this little circuit here, and corresponding to this orbit, right? Well, okay, this is a little complicated, but you know, at least I finish with that. I can, you can get information about other invariants. For example, at some point we managed to find how the way the quantum mechanics has information about the angle in which the manifold cross. Obviously, the angle is not an invariant, but you can make it an invariant and making and we didn't know it. I mean, we just discovered that, and then one day we were talking to Ernest von Tick, and he told us that that was the Lafutkin invariant. Well, okay, I'm not going to give you the details, but you can find them in this European Physical Letter paper. Okay, other people have seen Cantori. For example, these people, well, they make a very complicated analysis, but for example here, Bob Brown and Bob Wyatt make this nice calculation in which they show in the multiphoton dissociation of a diatomic molecule, they show the barriers to chaotic classical motion and quantum mechanical localization. You recognize this citation, right? McKay, Ben Simon. It was the days in which these things were permeated into chemistry, which I did my postdoc and learned all these things. Okay, so, well, it's a diatomic molecule, a laser field, and an interaction. And, okay, well, this is chemistry, but this is nonlinear mechanics. This is phase space picture, this is Cantori. And this is quantum mechanics. This is a packet. So what they did is they put a packet in between these two Cantori. And what happened is that if it were trajectories, well, the trajectory will found the little holes that there are on the Cantori. Let me say that. I mean, I know that you know how to say that strictly, but I not. But you know, they are it's hollow. But if those holes are smaller than H bar in quantum mechanics, they are impenetrable. And this is what you see in this calculation. I mean, it does not get out, or it leaks very little, right? That was a very nice paper in 1986. And this is what we have done. I have like 10 minutes, right? Which is the quantum Poincaré-Birkhoff theorem. Okay, well, you know what Poincaré-Birkhoff theorem say, but let me say this. I took it for very just to make sure that I know what it means, right? The idea is that you have your amperture Hamiltonian, everything is in tori, and the rational tori destroyed by whatever perturbation, and gives you this change of islands of stability with the corresponding unstable orbit, right? Okay, so, well, this picture is horrible, but you know, this is in the Harper map, so we vary k from point one, in which you just see tori. Well, believe me, that you don't see, you only see tori. There is a family which is around the origin, and there is another at the corner. You see. Okay, so as you increment your perturbation, you end up seeing resonances. Here you see the 1 to 14, and the 1 to 10 is somewhere there. Right. Probably you don't see much, but well, you have seen pictures similar. So when you increase k bigger. To see to point two, I mean the 1 to 14 disappear, swallowed by chaos and by this chaos, and there is the 1 to 6. There is the 1 to 10 here. You see the island, and there is a 1 to 6 here, and here the 1 to 6 survive. So I'm gonna show you. I'm gonna do my quantum calculation in this around this value 0.2. So I will see the 1 to 10 and 1 to 6 resonance. How do you make quantum calculation out of a map? Well, I didn't do the calculation. My colleague Diego Biniaski did it, and it's quite complicated. I'm not sure that I understand all the details. So if you ask, I will try to answer, but I may not know. But the idea is that you have to construct and diagonalize an evolution operator, because you have to put the Hamiltonian, but you also have to put the kicks. Well, the kicks, I put them here artificially because in this case it's 1. I mean, you don't see the kicks here anywhere, but it's because t is 1, so I put it here. So and then you can write down this function of the Hamiltonian in this way. Well, it's very simple to do the calculation. It's really fast. I mean, you can do extremely detailed calculation with this. Way, but I'm not going to give you the details, but it's simple, right? Just believe me. And so the idea is that you diagonalize this and you get eigenphases, essentially. I mean, every time that you have an eigen energy, you have an eigenphase and you have an eigen function and stuff. And okay, what we have done here, again, a horrible picture, is we have plotted these eigenphases as a function of k. So the good thing about when you do a calculation on a quantum map is that everything is finite. So you have a number, a finite number of eigenstates, as opposed to what Rafa was saying, that in quantum mechanics everything is infinite. Well, not in maps. But so h bar here is related to n. So you have a resolution. In nature, h bar has a value, and you have that resolution. But in the map, you can play with that and make it very detailed. This is why we did that. So, okay. So, well, we did this calculation with, I think it was 60 function. And so we got the eigenphases. They are on the cycle. So they go from minus pi to pi. So this is cylindrical. I got very lost at the beginning. But, you know, every time one of these curves disappear here, it reappears here. And it goes, you know, you have to wrap your page. Right? And so what happened is, okay, you see that half of them have a positive slope and the other half has negative slope. This is because there are states that live in the central tori or in the corner tori. So we are going to be interested only in the positive slope which lives in the center. And you, well, if you examine, it's hard, but you see, sometimes they cross, right? Well, they cross many, many, many times. But if you are okay, and you see that this slope varies. Okay, and it's just linear at the beginning. Well, this slope gives you the action, give the action of the tori, give you the quantum number. So this means that this is a state corresponding to a quantized tori in the center with a specific number. So this is 0, this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you can count them. Up to 30 and another 30 in the other place. So it's very simple. And so then, very patiently, you can see when they cross. And you can detect a family. A family in the sense that you call a family of crossings every time that the difference in quantum number or action, if you prefer it, is a given number. So the red squares are 10 and the blue circles are 6. I'm going to concentrate in this, in the 6. Okay, and so what? Well, nothing much. It's just that, okay, there is a theory. I mean, Wigner and von Neumann make a rule in the 30s. They say that, well, two states cannot cross. They have to avoid crossings. And the interaction is the separation. That tells you which is the interaction. And the interaction is something you know how to calculate because it's normal forms. Right? So, okay, all this is quantum, so there is no normal form or anything. Right? So, but the idea is that we can look into these pictures and see the separation of these crossings. It's very tiny, but Diego Vinyasky did it and collect them in these pictures, right? So this is the separation at the crossing in a certain family. For example, this is the family 10, right? But what? Okay, well, so let me do it this slide first. So here what happened is that you see them that these points, which are quantum calculation, they sit on a curve. How did we calculate this curve? Normal forms. This is a semi-classical analysis of that. So we pick up the Hamiltonian, we made the normal form, and we cut it at the first order. And, well, I mean, not the first order, you know, we didn't take many. It fits very well. So that means that we are representing very well the quantum mechanics with this normal form. And what did we do in the normal form? We took at a resonance. We pick up a resonance. Which one? Okay, so when you examine one of these crossings, what you see is, okay, here this is, you see that there is a function, this is the Hussini again, right? So you see that the Hussini is sitting here and here. So this is an inner tori than this one which sits outer. So this one has more action than this one. Obviously, the zeros of the Hussini tell you the action. This is for and this is 10. So there is a difference of 6. So this is a member of the family. So this is 4 and 10. The difference gives 6. You can find the 6, the 5, 12, the 6, whatever. They are different. Okay, and they are going to be a chain, the character. So at the end, the 4 points here are going to go there, and the 10 points here are going to come in. But what happened when they cross? Well, do you remember that I showed you that in the resonances, in the scars, some of the zeros migrate? Well, this is what happened here. 6 of the outer points of the zeros, of the outer zeros, sorry, migrate toward the interior. And 6 out of the interior migrate to this intermediate place. And they happen to sit on the stable island and the unstable island, respectively. So this is, it's very descriptive, but what we say is that this is the way in which quantum mechanics see the Poincaré-Birkhoff structure. This is a Poincaré-Birkhoff structure, this and this, right? So this is zeros of the Hosseini function, which is a quantum distribution in phase space, but also I agree very well with the fixed stable and unstable points. And you can calculate also these figures semi-classically, just using the 1-6 resonance. So because this is what we did. We did normal form, keeping that term, right? Okay. We did one last thing, because you see that here there are triangles, there are circles, and there are crosses. What we did is we changed the value of n of our calculation. The triangles are 30, the circles are 60, and the crosses are 100. What do we get out of that? I told you that there is an inverse relation between n and h bar. So h bar, if we make n bigger, h bar will be smaller. And then the resolution of our quantum calculation will be better. So the quantum mechanic here will be able to see more of the classical structure. Or if you prefer, there will be a structure that you don't see at 30 and you will see at 100. And what you see is that here you see this family in the crosses start earlier, at earlier values of k, where all the Poincaré-Birkhoff structure is less developed. So here, with this calculation, we don't see it. Because the triangle stop here. We need a value of k to make the island big enough so that our value of h bar can see it quantum mechanically. But we can increment this precision as much as we want. Okay, this is all I wanted to tell you.